2, and we're going to go through day 19 in this first episode of our three special programs this month about Harry's research expedition and what he found down there. We're going to be doing another program on the 30th and the 31st, 2 hours each night, with more pictures, lots more pictures. This is going to be really fun. Okay.
Lots more history, too.
Yeah, you bet. All right. Next up, we've looked at the hotel. We looked at day 12, the Grouch Bay. Now we're at day 13, and tell us where we are.
Right. We're in Montevideo. These pictures are not clickable. And, you know, with the blue lights, that's the hotel. This Montevideo is a high buck area, that and Punta del Este. They only take, well, they'll take other currencies, but they quote the room rates in Yankee dollars.
Hmm.
So it was very, a little more expensive, but it was really, really super. And those are just a couple street scenes in Montevideo. Then we've got the anchor memorial to the battle, and then you see a bunch of Third Reich stamps on a work table.
All right, now help us out. Which battle?
Oh, the Battle of the River Plate.
Yeah,
the,
we want to make sure everybody knows. Yeah. Now, is that anchor from the Grouch Bay?
No. That's not a Navy-type anchor. It's just a memorial anchor.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, it's not a Navy-type anchor.
Are those tombstones in the ground?
No, just memorial plaques.
Okay.
The local Rotary put that together many years after the battle, as just a memorial.
So the battle was actually offshore there?
Yep, that's it. You're looking out towards where the Grouch Bay blew itself up.
Wow.
Still out there.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a black water dive. That's what divers call it. Black water is really not black. It's brown, but it's just, you got zero visibility. You got to go groping yourself through there. If you're lucky, you got maybe 1 or 2 foot visibility.
Wow.
And there's a current. It's, you know, it's a great formula for dead divers.
Yeah, I would think. Oh.
So.
Okay, and, the Third Reich postage stamps. What are they doing there?
Ah, yeah, that's a teaser. We're going to get to that in a moment.
Okay.
The same with the flying wing and this strange looking house. Now, right below that, you see where it says, click here to see more of the events of this day. So we clicked that, and there it goes. Here we go. Did you guys click?
Okay. We did. All right.
All right. And here at the top row is the memorial, and then the two photos below that is the street scene across there and some really bad-looking mermaids. They're right there by that memorial. That would scare me back into the boat.
I would think. They ought to have a couple of buoys anchored off the remains out there so people can at least see a couple of yellow buoys.
They do have a sea buoy out there to warn sea mm-hmm. traffic away, but it's a couple miles out. It's 50 kilometers across from Uruguay to Argentina there. You can't see the other side of the river.
Well, that's why the ferry boat was so expensive. That's a long haul.
Yeah, it was 3 hours. Very quiet, very pleasant. You know, they got little snack bars all through the place. It was very, you know, big, heavy leather, overstuffed chairs. Very nice.
Now look at this. When is this? This mermaid on the right.
Yeah.
They look like they're legs. Are those legs at the bottom in the foreground?
I could never figure it out, and I was standing there taking a photo. I couldn't figure that out, legs or the tail, or she must have been about 12 feet from head to tail.
That's weird.
Or maybe there's something I just didn't see.
Hmm. All right. Very good.
Now we come to, it starts getting real interesting here. You see all these Third Reich postage stamps.
Yeah, yeah.
We were in a little Dinkwater village. It's a pueblo, I think. Martin found this mechanic, and this mechanic is about 40-ish. He collects all this Third Reich stuff, mostly canceled stamps, postage stamps.
Uh-huh.
And I love the way he keeps them protected. protected. He just throws them out on his workbench, which does not meet any standard of cleanliness I ever saw. And he said that he has a friend whose grandfather was in the Luftwaffe. Okay, so Martin and I went to lunch. He called his friend to see if he would talk to us, and he said, sure, come on over. So we went over there, and the fellow was about 40, big guy, about 6'2", blue eyes, blonde hair, with a German name, and he's talking about his grandfather was in the Luftwaffe, and he started in gliders, and, okay, I've heard that story before, because that's how they all started.
They all started that way.
In gliders. Then he said his grandfather went into more design and stuff, and along with his brother Walter, they designed some airplanes, and his name was Reimer Horton.
Oh, that's
cow.
Yeah, your jaw must have dropped.
Oh, man. Reimer Horton, the two Horton brothers designed the flying wing, the HO-229 jet-powered bomber for the Luftwaffe flying wing. And he showed me all, you can see all the pictures here. He rolled out pictures and blueprints and everything and told us to take all the pictures we wanted. Unfortunately, these are the only pictures I was able to save off that chip.
Now, are you telling me that those are actually drawings, World War II drawings by the Hortons?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's that's amazing.
It's incredible. And also letters from the U.S. Air Force, because Reimer Horton, his grandfather, helped design the B-2 stealth bomber and the F-117 stealth fighter, which I never knew.
Ah, astounding.
Yeah, and he put me in touch with his stepdad, who's Horton's son. And the two of them said, you know, any information you got or you want, we'll be happy to help you.
Just incredible. Those are actual World War II drawings of some of the Horton flying wing prototypes. They had about 8 or 9 of them before they came up with the 229. Look up HO-229 on any Google search, any search engine, and see what the Hortons, and this plane flew at the end of the war. They ran out of time, but it flew.
That's right. And we even have a picture, which was back on the main page of this tour, of the Horton bomber flying over the Brazilian rainforest. They also designed a flying wing transport for the Argentine Air Force. We've got a film of that. It's not very pretty. It looks like a Winnebago motorhome hung underneath a flying wing. It's just ugly as all get out, but it flew.
Well, that's the top right blueprint if you look at it. It's a flying wing, a delta wing, with a big box under it.
That's the guy. Ugly? Oh, man, it was ugly, but we've got films of it flying.
Those people were geniuses, the Hortons.
Yeah, they sure were. And there's a picture of him down there in the gold frame that his son brought out for us to see.
Very nice
man.
Yeah, wow.
So now we click the back button and we find out what that big eagle-looking guy is. Okay, so click your back button.
Okay, got it.
And there you can see the flying wing over the Brazilian rainforest.
Yeah, that's a picture of one in Germany, isn't it? Or is that flying over
South America?
They actually built one down there.
Yeah, this, if you look at it closely, is not the 229.
No, I can tell that right away. There are no engine nacelles, no pods,
not
nothing.
That's correct. You don't see the engines up on the back of the wings. So,
what was this, a glider?
Oh, I don't think it's a glider. It's powered.
Now, this is up in the air over the rainforest.
Yeah, right. And the photo is being taken by a chase plane.
Well, somehow it got up there. I don't see any evidence of propulsion, though. It may have been a glider. They built a lot of gliders, the Hortons.
Okay. I don't know much more about it than that.
That's astonishing. It could have been towed up and then released, and it's gliding, so... But anyway, if you do any research at all, you'll find out that the Hortons had a whole series of planes just like that, leading up to the powered versions, which they built at the very end of the war. The 229 would have revolutionized everything. Just astounding.
Yeah, everything came along too late for Germany. The manufacturing capability of the United States and the ability to just pour endless manpower into the battle by the Soviets, you couldn't fight against that. So let's scroll down. You see where it says click here to see more. Forget that. Go down below that, and you see the picture of that big, ugly eagle. It says, what the heck is this? Click on the photo.
What the heck is it? All right, let's go look. Yeah. Click on the photo.
Yeah, so click on the photo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a house of some type.
Wow.
Built right on a small cliff overlooking the Atlantic. And why? Why? It was built in 1945, right after the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
According to the official history, it was built by an eccentric Italian millionaire. Who the hell wants to... Who would ever build a house like that? Who would ever dream of a house like that? I don't know, but other people think that it was to act as a landmark for the
boats, U-boats,
and ships going down on the rat line going down to southern central Argentina. We couldn't go into it because vandals had broken in just recently, and the place is under renovation. But 2 years ago, a group of neo-Nazis staged a rally at this house. So why would they do that if it was only some guy's bright idea?
Very strange. Very strange. Then, nobody there would be able to give you any information about it.
No, everybody's too young. Everybody we found was too young. They were in their 50s, and, you know, that they weren't around when the war was...
Well, it's overlooking, you know, obviously a well-groomed beach.
Oh, yeah, and they got a great view out to the Atlantic. They're probably, they're looking out, I don't know how far that is, probably 8-10 miles out, because they're up quite a ways. And this thing, you look at it, it's a good 3 stories high, plus they're... underground, call it a basement, call it a bunker, I don't know, we never got there. And then we go below the pictures of the landing looking out over the beach. Now we're actually on the beach, and you can see what a huge panorama they had. I'm starting out shooting to the north and circling around as the pictures go, you know, looking northward up the beach, et cetera, and then out to the east, and then down toward the bottom. And then, of course, two girls in the Chase Lounge. I couldn't help myself.
Well, yeah. Like Entenmann's pastry, I understand.
Then you look down at this weird-looking object sticking out of the sand right at the base of the cliff. I never found out what it was, but if you look down there where I've got the red circle, it looks like the number 35 has been welded onto the lid. What is? I don't know.
And you couldn't get into it. It looks big enough for somebody to get in, and it may have been a tunnel up to the house, right?
That could have been, but if you look closely at the picture on the bottom left, you see weld marks all along the
lid. Oh, yeah, I see that. Sure.
So even Arnold Schwarzenegger wouldn't be able to pick up that lid.
There's 35.
Yeah, what does that mean? We don't know. We never found out. And the guide up there, the guy who was helping park cars, et cetera, he was a kid of about 20 years old. You
what
know?
Does he know?
Exactly. All he knows is, you know, just don't throw your trash on the ground, et cetera. So, but, you know, why did the neo-Nazis come there for a rally?
Very strange. Yeah. Very strange.
So now, okay, we click our back button, and we go to the place Martine calls M&M Country, which he said stands for Models and MILFs, Punta del Este, which is the Monte Carlo of Uruguay.
That's day 14.
Day 14, right, a magnificent city. And you look there in the picture, And whose picture do you see? It's Donald Trump.
That's the Trump.
That's the Trump Tower he's building there.
Yeah.
And the sign says ultra exclusive residences. So let's click on the picture of Donald Trump's Trump Tower.
Okay. Got it.
Now, here was a puzzle. This big six-engine flying boat, not to be confused with the Junkers 390. This is a French-built flying boat. And in July of 45, this exact plane, F-BANT, had to make an emergency landing in a lagoon, where we've got the two pictures there, in a lagoon in Uruguay. Why? What the heck was it doing down there? The number three engine, the props, the blades flew off the prop, smashed into the number two engine, which is the middle engine on the left wing, and it disintegrated, and one of the prop blades flew through the fuselage, cut a 2-meter-long gash, and didn't do very much for the two people sitting in that seat. It killed them. And the plane had to make an emergency landing in this lagoon. What cargo was aboard? Who was aboard? We don't know yet, but we're going to try to find out.
That's a strange one. Where is this lagoon?
It's several hours outside of Punta del Este. I don't know the name of the town or whatever. It's called Rocha Lagoon.
That's pretty big.
And, it's a big lagoon, but we're driving along down the nice paved two-lane highway, and suddenly we're on an old dirt road. I mean, the pavement just quit, and we had to go another hour down this dirt road, and poor Martine was all worried about his new Volkswagen Passat.
Hmm.
So he drives very cautiously.
Well, the first flight of this plane was just before the war ended.
That's correct. It was in May, I believe.
March.
March, okay. And this plane was flying down there in July when it had its problem. But the interesting thing, we cannot find any record of the airport of departure or the intended destination airport. We can't even find a passenger roster or the names of those people who were killed, the two people who were killed. Disappeared. So the bottom picture, we had a long, hard ride back to Punta del Este. We were having a nice lunch at Papa Charlie's restaurant, which is right across the boulevard from Trump Tower. And so we had to rest because the next day we were heading into the wilderness. And believe me, Jeff, it was the wilderness. So click the back browser. And we're back to see day 14 by Trump Tower, and we roll down.
That's amazing to see Donald down there, at least his face, and he gets around. He gets around.
Yeah, caught me by surprise, too. I said, what the hell?
Yeah.
I made Martine turn around and drive back so I could get a picture of the place.
That's funny.
So now we had to drive about 450 kilometers across some really desolate wilderness. And you click on this place that it says Durazno. Click on that picture.
And okay, where is Durazno?
It's out there in Bong Bong Land somewhere. I don't know. It's about 450 kilometers out of Punta del Este, somewhere in Uruguay.
All right.
No
pictures of Trump there, I guess, huh?
No.
Not yet.
No.
I see.
No.
All right.
As it says there, if you saw the movie Romancing the Stone, you'll find that little primitive village where they found the Mexican drug lord with the truck to take him out of there. Well, this place was not much different. This is the unique place. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's nowhere near the ocean, but it's got a lighthouse. Who builds a lighthouse nowhere near an ocean?
What? That's odd.
There it is. Heavy security. The place was built in 1936, 37 or 38 by German engineers. And we had to come through the first gate. The guard waved us through.
Then now, this is Durazno.
Well, it's outside of Durazno, a ways.
Right.
Then we...
Which picture are we on, Harry?
We're on the one where you see the two pictures of the lighthouse. And the picture on the right there shows the fences. And then below that is me pointing at the lighthouse. And the one on the right is me with Officer Dumbass.
Okay, I missed out. I didn't click on something. I should have clicked on Durazno.
Yes.
Okay, I missed that. All right. Clicking on Durazno. Let's all click on that.
There you go.
And there we are. Okay.
Yeah, so we were passed through the first gate. Then we came here. We wanted to go into the tower. And Officer Dumbass there said no, he couldn't let us in because he said there was a radiation leak. This is a 77-year-old hydroelectric plant. You know, like I say there on my little...
Lots of radiation and plants like that. That guy with the necktie said there was a radiation leak.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, he's been...
So we found another guard who says, yeah, who cares? Let us in. And
that looks like a tower at an airport, Harry.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, but there's no airplane place around there. And you got to wonder why this place generates umpty zillion kilowatts of electricity. Why do they have solar panels down there? Right behind where I'm standing in my blue shirt
what,
and pants.
Okay, what is generating the electricity? Is there a hydro?
Yeah, we'll scroll down a little bit. And it's a huge hydroelectric plant built by Germany in 1938.
Oh.
And when the war, as it says there, when the war began, the Uruguay police raided the place and found pictures of Adolf Hitler on the wall.
Oh, what
so
a shock.
What? It was built by Germany.
Yeah.
You go into any... government building
of course.
In any country, and the president or chancellor or whatever is hanging on the wall.
Of course.
So that's, and you can scroll down some more, and you can see how old the place is. And the one there, the road, if that's what you want to call it, that's what we drove down with his Volkswagen Passat. And the unique thing about this place, this is the light bulb at the very bottom, bottom. That's a light bulb, and the filament is in the shape of a swastika. Somebody
said, darn. It sure is. Yeah.
Somebody who's technically sharper than me said that that would project actually a swastika figure out, like, you know, like the bat signal. Maybe it was to be used for some kind of a signal. Who knows?
What a strange thing.
Yeah.
That picture of the light bulb is a stock picture, or did you take that picture?
No, that's a stock picture.
Mm-hmm.
I took all the rest of them, but that one we had to lift.
Right. Now, that was up in the top of that...
Yeah, up in the lighthouse.
Wow.
Why would you build a lighthouse...
What a mystery.
Or an aircraft control tower.
Somebody landed there at some point, somehow.
Could have been, I don't know. But then as we scroll down, you know, we see the housing that was built by the Germans for the German workers, and now it's Uruguayan workers, and they've kind of let it kind of fall apart a bit.
Wow. What an amazing thing. Okay, hold on, we have to pause. We can back button out of this and get back... if you're ready, and when we come back, we'll continue. Either way, hold on.
We'll be back. It gets better now.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Okay, and we're back with Admiral Cooper on a great trip. We've seen everything from Lawrence of Argentina to a very strange aircraft control tower. What is it? Out in the middle of nowhere. Very strange.
So now we look to Happy Valentine's Day.
All right, we'll go back,
back blade.
Happy Valentine's Day it is, yesterday.
Yeah, and click on the picture there, me and the old lady in the red shirt.
Ah, be respectful now. Young lady.
Okay.
They never get angry if you call them young. Okay.
Everybody's younger than me.
All right.
Okay, so we go to... Now is when it gets interesting.
Oh, my. Does it ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. This is the chart that my agent Pizarro gave me last September when we met in Germany. We were in the dark corner of a little German restaurant, and which is where Pizarro and I always meet. And this is handwritten. Pizarro did this. Gave it to me, and that long straight road that runs north, west, south, east, that is where this JU-390 landed.
And look at that magnificent airplane. Now, that plane, they only made three. Two were completed. Right. The third never flew, apparently. That plane is surrounded by ground crew and personnel. Remember, the war is over, all but over at that time. It's the 11th hour and 59 minutes, and the doom of defeat is hanging over each and every one of those people, but they have a mission to perform, a very high-level mission.
Right. And this airplane, huge that it is, had a landing speed of 75 knots.
How can that
be?
You
can put that sucker down in your backyard.
Wow.
We went to this place.
Oh, German engineering, Harry. Never ceases to amaze me.
I know it. There was a little village there called the Colonia 19 April.
Okay, where are we in relation to the aircraft control tower thing, whatever it was?
Quite a ways.
We're a long ways away. Okay.
Yeah, long ways. Had nothing to do with that. And the picture down there on the left side is INC, Colonia, whatever, and on the right side, that's the road.
Well, they're selling property there. That's a parcel map.
Right. Yeah. Good luck. Anybody wants to buy property there, you might as well buy it in South Central L.A.
Wow.
It's gone to hell.
Now, that dirt road in 1945 was obviously clear of telephone poles and trees. And
exactly.
Was quite capable of landing at 75 miles an hour, that enormous aircraft.
Right. So then we were talking to a lot of people. But look at the next line down from that road, look on the left. That's what these people have come to. They're living in shacks now.
Yeah, I see.
And as Martin said, they're just passing time.
Yeah.
So this lady in the red, she's living in that house with her son-in-law because her daughter died, and her two grandsons are living there. They're 14 and 16 years old, I think.
Yeah, her face is known grief, you can tell.
Yeah. And, we were asking her, no, there were no Nazis there. Nope, don't know nothing about that. So you scroll down, and Martin, my guide, is about falling out of his shoes trying to signal me with his eyes, look at her right forearm.
Yeah.
And it scrolled down to the close-up.
Oh, I see it. I got a magnifying glass. Yep.
There you go. Stylized swastikas. And when Pizarro saw that, I got an email. And Pizarro says, on your page, I've seen the right arm of the old lady with the stylized S cross. Question you should ask this lady is for the code. Interesting, it is the right arm. So I have to get back to Pizarro and ask,
what does the code mean? Yeah.
I don't know. I have to find out. But the S cross means the swastika, because in Germany it's called the Hakenkreuz or the hooked cross. So, but she knew nothing about Nazis. And everybody we talked to Well, I heard about it, but I don't know it myself. But the person down the road, they know it for sure. You get down to them, well, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
So the, here we go to the next place, and you see on the left, it's a shack again.
How old was this woman? Would she have been alive in 1945?
Oh, yeah. Not the one in the red with the swastikas, but you scroll down, and that
lady was
alive.
Yeah.
Sure, she's like 90-something. And my two red arrows, it shows how the curtains are threadbare. The sofa's falling apart. She's living in a shack. Like Martine says, they're just passing time. Well, again, she was a nice lady. We talked for about an hour. She did not witness the airplane. And everybody said the same. I've heard stories, but I didn't see anything. She did remember that three of her three sisters from her school married three sailors off the Graf's Bay, and they had a truck. So she let me take a picture of her picture of the truck. So then we went down the road again.
That's about a 47 to a 53 Chevrolet pickup.
I'll take your word for it.
It is. It's a three-window GMC or Chevrolet pickup. Or it's not a pickup, but it's a flatbed.
Yeah, stake bed, whatever.
Yeah.
Looks like they built a house on the back, like
a little camper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's 47 to 53 they made that model.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anyhow, we scroll down a little more, and there's Martine checking out the so-called road to see if his Volkswagen is going to disappear. And then on the right, there's another old shack. That used to be the German school, and it was in perfect shape, but like everything else there, it's just gone.
This is amazing. Down. Now, this is, again, out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, it is indeed.
So what the hell's going on here?
They're just passing time till they die.
And the old lady, she wouldn't even go near it. Nothing.
Nope. So we keep scrolling down, and talked to one lady. She didn't want us to be on film, and so whenever I'm asking questions, I ask nice, easy questions, and then come in with a more important question, like,
sure,
you know, how old, how long have you lived here? Your parents, where'd they come from? And you know, what color is your kitchen floor, etc. And then I come in and ask about the airplane, and immediately I get a nervous laugh. This was an old lady who was 88 years old, Anna Wolf. And, you know, nervous laugh. And she
Anna
said,
Wolf?
About it.
That's a German name.
Yeah, no joke. She's 88 years old. And so that nervous laugh tells you something, and we're going to get into the nervous laugh again in another photo array. We talked to a guy who lived in the old German school, who wouldn't let us take pictures. He was very nervous, kept his head down, and never made eye contact.
Well, these people have something to hide, obviously.
It would seem that way. Yeah. The only really well-kept part of the whole area is the cemetery.
German names?
Oh, yeah, sure. No swastikas, but German names. Because it was a German colony. It was a thriving German farming colony back in the 20s and 30s. I don't know what happened to them. So let's click back, and it gets even more interesting.
Well, this is fascinating. Okay, back click.
Yeah, it gets back click. And
all
look
right
at day 17, which is the 15th of February.
I don't know if... you see, click on her photo to see... You might want to make that a little bit bigger font so people don't miss it.
Okay.
These the clickable photos.
I'd
double the size of it, make it red, maybe. Okay.
Okay.
Day 17, all right?
Right. And we tracked down the daughter of Baron Alfred von Metzger, who owned the estancia where this JU-390 came to. So we clicked
on the estancia is a ranch.
Yeah,
ranch, farm.
A ranch. So we click on that.
Okay, click on that picture. Now, this we're looking for this 390. Harry's down there looking for the JU-390, which
right
flew there? Do we have a date, approximate date of landing? Except to say 1945?
Early May.
Now, you remember that Hitler died in the bunker in Berlin in April, right?
April 30.
Yeah, okay.
Except he was gone by about the 23rd of April.
Yeah.
Because Bormann signed all the orders after that. Hitler didn't sign any orders after 23rd of April. We stopped in to visit with a very nice man, Gerard Korn, who's an older guy, and he was friends with Baron von Metzger.
Uh-huh.
And he survived the bombing of Berlin, and he escaped to Uruguay, and he said that the rumor persists that the Ju-390 actually landed on the Estancia or on the road that fronted it, okay? But, of course, they have the Sergeant Schultz problem. I hear nothing, I see nothing, I know nothing.
Right.
So we tracked down the daughter of von Metzger, and as you scroll down, you see the German school that von Metzger was behind forming the colony and building the school, etc. And there you see the class with Professor Becker in the background, who got arrested in 1939 because he continued to teach German. Then you see the picture of Herta von Metzger and her husband. When Martine went to the door to ask if she was okay, that I came in and talked to her, she wanted to know who I was, what I was doing there, what questions, etc. And so finally, okay, we were invited in. She was a very polite lady, but she was born 1948, so she obviously didn't see anything in 1945. So, again, I was asking questions and then zinged into the one about the airplane and got the same ha-ha-ha-ha nervous laugh. And my minor was psychology. And so it indicates to me that this is a nervous laugh, something they don't want to reveal. So I ran this by one of our members, Dr. Charles Ellis, who is a very, very up on the pecking order psychiatrist. And he said, yep, that would be my conclusion. So she knows nothing, hears nothing, but she did say that her father told her in 1945 the police chief came to the Estancia to search for an airplane because somebody reported an airplane landing on the Estancia. She claimed it was only a small airplane in the barn, but that seems like a smoke screen. And right below that, I just got an update from Pizarro. Now, Pizarro was there in 1969 and met the pilot of that airplane.
Of the 390?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and there's everything that Pizarro told me. And right below that, so, you know, the pilot thinks he landed his plane there, but...
Well, I would bet on the pilot rather than Herta.
Yeah, right, because Herta was not even born yet. She wasn't even a smile on her father's face. So there's no question that 390 landed there. Now, when I visit with Pizarro in this fall, I'm going to see if I can't find out who was on that airplane, because all I'm getting out of Pizarro so far is they were very important people.
Well, and Pizarro doesn't want to put anything on email, obviously.
No.
He would only tell you face-to-face. Here's a quote. He or she. The pilot in 1969, when Pizarro met with the pilot, this is the pilot of the 390, smiled and told me, yes, in 1945, it was the best camouflage for the big JU. And the rest of the story, he told, I think it was in 1965, I received information that a Uruguay diplomat or the Uruguay, you said, this police officer came out. This is amazing. Now, Uruguay was aligned with Britain. You have to remember that.
Yeah, right. Right? So that's...
It's interesting they would choose that location if Uruguay was aligned with the British to land the highest level human cargo that the world would imagine.
Yeah, I can't understand why they would go to Uruguay also, because Argentina was very pro-German.
Yeah, another question for Pizarro.
Oh, yeah. Poor Pizarro. He's probably listening right now, he or she.
Maybe he had landed somewhere else and offloaded the cargo and then flown to Uruguay.
Maybe. We will find out. So anyhow, click your back button.
Okay, I'm still reading. This is fascinating.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. We only have about 6 minutes. But remember, we have two more programs coming up on the 30th and the 31st. So whatever we don't get to tonight, we'll get to most of it. We'll just hold over until we get to
There's many more days. I mean, we're only up to day 18 and 19. I got 28 days on this tour, and it gets better and better.
Yeah.
So, and your listeners can go to sharkhunters.com and get more.
Okay.
Okay, now you're on day 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like maybe we put in the wrong photo.
Nice.
Because that's Bavaria, right?
Yeah.
Well, click on the picture. And we had some hard driving to do for the next couple of days, 700 kilometers. And a lot of it is road that, like, hardly anything should have been planted there.
Okay.
And it's over 105 degrees. We went over a very modern bridge, as you see there, back into Argentina.
Yeah.
And there's the map that shows the finger of Argentina coming up between Paraguay on the left and Brazil on the right, making it simple for anyone who's being chased to just duck from one country to another.
Mm-hmm.
So we're prepping here for major stuff in the next day or two after this picture was taken. But then we go along, and we stopped in this little pueblo, and you see the tourist office there. The lady who runs a tourist office is sitting outside because it was 105 degrees and she got no AC.
Mm.
Then we went to the allegedly out of business factory where they made corned beef for the British Army in both World Wars.
It's still in Argentina, or Uruguay, I mean.
No, now we're in Argentina.
Okay.
And it's out of business, but they got a guard at the gate. We were told photography was forbidden. And there's a very modern diesel truck there with the engine running, and we hear machinery noises coming from the building. And the entry where it says Liebig Corned Beef, that's neatly kept. Martin just said he thinks probably something illegal is going on in that factory. Probably has to do with drugs because it's right on the river.
Mm.
So we decided we don't need to stick around there. And there's the plaque to Baron Justus von Liebig, another German, founded the place in, I think, the 1920s.
Look at that sign. It's all spiffy, Liebig corned beef in English.
Yep.
Corned beef.
In English.
Mm.
Amazing.
Mm.
Well, they were making it for the British Army. Maybe that's why. Who knows? So we scroll down, and then zingo bingo, there's that 7-foot-tall Valkyrie and these two German kids with the German flag on a desolate highway. You see all those pictures?
I too.
Yeah.
So what's the deal here?
I was falling in love with that Valkyrie, but unfortunately she was just painted on wood.
Mm.
That's a good question. Out in the middle of nowhere. No town, no village, no nothing around there. Never run out of beer or anything, so we pulled in and had a nice lunch. But then we had to pull in for the night at a town called, I put down Yippee Yappy, but it's pronounced Shapashu. Because in Argentine Spanish they pronounce things a little differently.
Mm.
And so we got tucked in for the night. Each one of us had a bungalow, and we could have had the whole family there, because as you see there are four single beds in the outer room, then there's a bedroom with a double bed.
Mm.
And the whole works, I think, was like $20-25 a night with the breakfast. But here's the interesting thing. Scroll down to the next ones.
Mm-hmm.
You see the river, and you're looking across the river at Paraguay from Argentina.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So how hard is it if the Mossad or somebody's closing in on you to just jump in a boat and zip across the river?
It's 5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. Or if you're on the other side of that long finger, zip over the border into Brazil.
Yeah.
It gets better. Believe me, it gets bunches better here. So let's catch the last day. Click on the back button.
Okay. That's Dengue, D-E-N-G-U-E, Dengue.
Okay, did I spell it wrong?
Yeah, you got D-E-N-G-E-S, it's G-U-E.
Oh, okay.
Zika and Dengue, got it.
Yeah, that's where we're headed in a couple of days up to that area. But the last day that we have posted so far, you see a picture of me and the guy in the blue shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, click on that.
Okay.
And like I say, I'm not going to reveal where or names or anything for obvious reasons. But the top pictures, we're just having breakfast at that bungalow place.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, we had a waiter come out and wait on us and everything. Really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But we were going up to where the dengues and the Zika people were, mm-hmm. mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out of the shower, I covered myself completely with cream repellent.
Yeah.
And then put on my clothes, soaked my clothes from head to foot with spray repellent. They were
right.
Totally soaked.
Wow.
So no self-respecting skunk would come near me. So then we see the little town there, the bank. It looks like something out of The Hole
yeah.
in the Wall.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah.
And of course, I've got modern, updated plastic with chips. They don't have modern, updated chip readers down there, so I couldn't get any money. Poor Martina had to keep paying for everything. By the time we were done, I owed him about 4,000 pesos, which is next to no money at all. And this day had nothing to do with Third Reich history because we were just in the middle between where we left and where we had to be the next day.
Right.
This is where General San Martin was born and grew up. Not that big white building, that's the memorial they built around it.
Uh-huh.
If you see the picture of me standing next to the grenadier, that pile of bricks in there, that's what's left of the home where General San Martin was
that's a
born
real
and
that's
grew.
A real guard there.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He didn't budge. He's like, you know, the honor guards at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier or the guys at Buckingham Palace. I came in and gave him a bit of a salute, never batted an eye.
Wow.
So it's an honor thing for those guys. They got to be at least 6 foot tall, and that's a position of honor.
Hmm.
Well, then scrolling down, we went by this restaurant, and I jokingly said there's a poor gaucho must be missing his favorite mule because the meat looked great, but Jesus, it was like cardboard. Then, here's the interesting thing. You see those two pictures with the red clay?
Yes.
That's the same kind of red clay they allegedly found inside the skull of Martin Bormann after they just happened to find his body in Berlin. What was that, in the late 1970s, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they DNA'd it, and it was Martin Bormann, but how did he get this red clay? They don't have this red clay in Berlin, that's for sure.
Are you suggesting they took his body back there at some point let it be discovered after it was buried, perhaps in this kind of clay?
Pretty much, yep.
So that proves, quote, proves that he died in Berlin at the end of the war and deflects people from looking to Argentina.
That's exactly what we think. Pizarro explained that, Lawrence explained that, but Pizarro was, and also another agent I referred to as Peter Parker, said that at a certain point in the Cold War or whatever, it was necessary to put an end to the bugaboo of the escaped Nazis and so
I see.
To find Bormann. And like I've said all along, there's got to be tens of thousands of dead people in Berlin
Yeah.
And they're skeletons. How do you know which one is which? So you can test for DNA. Why would you think to test for DNA? Was he holding a little sign that says, "Hi, I'm Marty"?
So, who did they get the other DNA from to test? Or he's got relatives still alive?
Oh, he had, Borman had 10 kids. One of them became a priest, et cetera. So they had something to match with.
Wow.
So I'm not trying to rush it, but I know your clock is ticking. This fella here, and I won't say his name or where he was with or the paper. He's with a major paper. He's a political editor.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us that the Germans came there at the end of the First World War, established two communities across the border. And he was just incredible with the help he gave us. And so we're in contact with him. We call him Antonio, for lack of a better name.
Mm-hmm.
He's a political editor, and we're in the newsroom of that newspaper.
Wow. All right. We better wrap this up.
Yep.
We will be back, Harry and I, and hopefully all of you folks, on the 30th and the 31st of March to continue with this remarkable trip that Harry took down there. Thank you. This is fascinating, to say the least.
My pleasure. And remember, every day I'm posting more and more pictures, so your listeners can go to that. And also just send me an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net, and say you want a free copy of the magazine, Zingo Bingo. It'll be on your email.
Wow, these pictures are laid out beautifully. Thank you very much, Admiral, and we'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Have
all
a great evening.
Good night. Harry Cooper. All right, we'll take a quick break and be right back.